podcast with a K. This week on the podcast with a K, I, Christian Corley, I'm joined by him, Brian Terranova, and he, James McLean. Good evening, chaps.
Evening.
Hello.
Hello, 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 hello. We bring you this podcast to discuss Empress of Mars. Just wait for it. The 10th episode of Doctor Who Series 10. I'm struggling with that somewhat, but there you go. That's what it is. It is what it is. A phrase I never thought I'd ever say. Doctor
it's episode 9, isn't it?
Is it? I thought it was episode 10.
It's episode 9.
Is it episode 9?
I think it's episode 10.
It's 9.
It's 9. It's definitely 9.
Yes, it is 9.
Oh, hurrah. Oh, that's as bad as I thought. So, episode 9.
You don't have to say it.
Oh, Jesus. Hold on.
You can cut and paste that for next week.
Pardon?
I said you can cut and paste it for next week.
Yeah, that wasn't much better.
Yeah, no, it wasn't, but never mind. I could cut and paste it into next week, as James so humorously opined. So, Empress of Mars, the 9th episode of Doctor Who Series 10. In which the Doctor encounters ice warriors on Mars in the 19th century, along with some British redcoats from the Victorian era. Nice, fun stuff. On the face of it, very enjoyable. I think we should talk about the ice warriors first and foremost. Because although I like the way they were presented, and I think they were better presented than they were in the alien-esque Cold War, I want to see them kind of invading Earth instead of being Klingons. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the problem with Moff's era of Doctor Who. And even like some of Russell's as well. Like the aliens are hardly alien invaders. You know, the aliens are, it's always the humans are the bad guys. The aliens are just kind of, well, hey, you came to us. What do you expect? You know, like we're going to defend ourselves, of course. And then, or they're accidental, as we keep saying, like it's always just some kind of lab accident or some misunderstanding, a robot program that rewrote itself. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. I think they were well used in the story, but I don't think that they were used the way that they should have been. I think they should be the bad guy. They were created to be a bad guy. They should be used as a bad guy. You know, I don't know. It's kind of sad and boring to me that we're still not getting aliens invading Earth or being a threat that the Doctor actually has to stop. It's always like, well, hey, no, let's just talk about this. We're all friends here, you know, kind of situation now.
Maybe we don't need him now. Now, you know, we've got Torchwood, we've got UNIT, we've got some school kids at Coal Hill. Maybe we don't need the Doctor.
Yeah.
But in fairness, that's all we had last week.
Yeah, I know.
Wait.
To defeat the monks.
All we had was the Doctor to defeat the monks? I mean, the monks were an invading force. That was like probably the... When was the last time that we had a story of an alien invasion force in the Moth era? Aside from the monks.
The snowmen?
That far back?
That can't be right. There's Flatline, isn't there?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. But even then, they didn't know what they were doing. It was a two-dimensional being that was trying to come into our world, didn't realize that they were causing harm, if I remember correctly.
I think by the end of it, it's established that they do know that they're invading.
Do they? Okay.
Causing harm. Yeah. I think that's one of the
nice
things.
And I'm sorry,
about
there's going to be lawn maintenance going on outside the window now. I have to warn you about that. And there's going to be a thunderstorm as well. So quality assurance on my end is going to be dropping after my assurances to the otherwise prior to the podcast. Sorry.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. So,
I mean, yeah, I'm fine. Like, it's okay. It worked. In my opinion, it was a good story. It had issues, which they always do. When we get on here to talk about what a Moff era story, they do. And they even did in Russell's. But there were things that I clearly would have dropped from this story. Like, forgetting the story, forgetting the aspect that the Ice Warriors were not the bad guys. They were just kind of like the humans were the invading force in this case, which the way this story was told does work and does make sense. So eliminating that aspect and taking that on board for what it is, which did work, it was a fine story. Mm-hmm. What was I just going to say about that? It was a fine story, but it felt like we had, I shouldn't say but, and it felt like we went back to the beginning of the season. Yes. When the stories were, hey, things are getting good. Things are looking up. Moffat is realizing what he should be doing with this show now prior to the three-parter that we had gotten with the monks. I have other bits, but you know, I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I agree with that. It was the most enjoyable Doctor Who for about a month.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's got holes. There's a few odd things in there, but it races through. It's got a lot of pace. It's enjoyable. It's fun, which first and foremost it needs to be. I liked it. I like the mix of you got the John Carter, Edgar Rice Burroughs thing going on there with a bit of Verne's and Wells thrown in. It's just nice to watch. And the strong central performances again from Pearl Mackey and Peter Capaldi. Obviously Nardole didn't have much to do, and we'll probably talk about what he did do later on, but all in all, it's a good Doctor Who. James, what about you?
If I go a bit funny, what we'll do, Christian, is if you send me the file, I'll be recording this end so I can just dub my bits over the top.
Alright, okay.
Makes sense. It was okay. It felt like going back to season 6 again, though. The beginning opening, Paul Mackey's character no longer seemed to be the sort of slightly enchanting, interested girl, and was now back to being sort of super companion. It felt like Clara could have been there. Mm-hmm. Sort of cockiness, the sort of feeling in her place, despite the fact she'd never been in a sort of NASA situation. It just felt unreal again. The story, I agree with you, Christian, was pretty much okay. It didn't do much for me, but it didn't do anything horrendously badly either. The movie's jokes, again, felt very Series 6. You know, the callbacks to various films you'd not seen. I don't know, it just didn't fit the situation. It just sort of took away some of the sort of tension.
Yeah. Well, it dates the episode straight away, doesn't it? In 5 years' time, anyway.
And yeah, absolutely, yeah. Totally, it dates the episode. I hadn't thought of that. Totally. It just felt, I don't know, just a little weak. The dialogue was a little weak, really. I thought the super companion started to appear in it again. While I think it was quite nice having the Ice Queen address the female, it did feel like there was a need to give Pearl Mackey's Bill a bit of a presence, which you shouldn't need to force. Shouldn't have to be there. And in the final bit where she causes that ridiculous distraction, which again felt out of character, it felt like something Clara would do or Rose would do, but it just felt too orchestrated for Bill, that suddenly she knew that in this moment that she had to go and distract by having a verbal conversation. I don't know, it just didn't feel natural. And then while they're having this verbal conversation, the Doctor's very clearly hiking machinery up towards the roof, which the Ice Queen doesn't notice. And again,
noisy
maybe
machinery.
Worked in the script.
Yeah,
noisy machine. Yeah, in the script it probably worked, but in the setting it just looked silly. So there was loads of little bits and bobs which just didn't ring true to me. The Ice Warriors were well done. Yes, the Alpha Centauri thing was a nice nod, not important, so that was good. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. It just lost what the Doctor was doing again. It's sort of gone back into old habits.
The Alpha Centauri thing, too, is actually the same actress.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's on,
which is very nice.
Yeah.
92. I have to agree.
92, she is.
92, really? Oh, I didn't get that part. Nice. Wow. But I do agree there were definitely things within this story that didn't need to be there. And one of the first things that got me was the intro, the beginning stinger at the beginning of the episode.
Yes.
Number one of the first things for me was my wife is very into NASA and the space program, and she recognized the building as the building that's located here in Florida, one of the buildings located here in Florida. And when she saw that the Valkyrie was sending transmissions back from Mars, she said, well, that would be happening in Houston, not Florida. Huh. So that was kind of like, well, gee, that's taking away a little bit right there. But that entire scene didn't work for me. I agree with you that it was more like season six, series six, where it just shouldn't have been there. Like, I felt if you watch the episode after the opening credits,
yes,
and the Dr. Bill and Nardole land on Mars, if they had just decided that the doctor picked up a signal and they went there, or Bill said, hey, I want to check out Mars, it would have worked so much better.
Yeah, it was a bit bombastic, wasn't it? It was just,
yeah,
like, it's a big showpiece that was unnecessary, especially the fact that they just appeared there as well.
Well, yeah. And then, of course, like, you know, now you have the ramification that the world sees that there was this message on Mars. So, the world can't be oblivious to aliens anymore
to get
like they
up,
do.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
I read somewhere.
But...
I just want to go back before we get lost. What you were just saying about the NASA building being in the wrong place. I read somewhere that it wouldn't have been NASA in charge of that project anyway, because it's a probe.
Oh, really?
At that time in history. That it wouldn't have been a NASA. I can't remember the link, and I can't remember what organization or department it would have been, but apparently it wouldn't have been NASA anyway. So
wasn't that 20? It's 2017 though, right?
Did they not do? Is it?
I thought the intro took place in 2017.
No, I thought it
maybe
took
I'm wrong.
Place in the past.
Not
Let's
sure.
See here.
That's interesting.
I'll just put it on
real quick. In the past.
Well, I mean, going by the technology, it doesn't have a date or anything on it, but just going by the technology in there, I thought it was present day.
Oh, right. According to the synopsis on Wikipedia, it's 2017, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Go on.
No, I was just going to say what was kind of shocking is it feels, again, like one of those shower moments where, in the shower, Mark Gatiss thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to have at the Sting them finding these words written on Mars, and that's where the whole... sequence sort of gets wedged in for that one moment, where I think the Sting would have been far more effective just to have had the Ice Warrior heading towards the Doctor. That would have been a far more powerful moment.
That's exactly my thought, but I would have stopped it not with the Ice Warrior coming at the Doctor. I would have stopped it like, because you see the Ice Warrior coming at the Doctor, you think, oh yeah, it's the Ice Warriors, and even people who don't know is like, it's the alien or the Doctor, they'll throw the Stinger up. But don't stop there. Stop when Catchlove comes out and takes off his helmet, because then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what is this like 18th century guy or whatever era he is there again doing on Mars, you know? And that to me would have been where the good Sting would have been, because you would be expecting like it's Mars, it's Ice Warriors, but then you get thrown this curveball of the human. But either one would way better than the message on Mars.
I'd have probably re-edited it and done it the other way around and had the reveal of the soldier and then done the Sting with the Ice Warrior. I just think that has far more of a sort of emotive moment because the show has done too many of those sort of quirky, aren't you surprised things for the Sting.
Sure.
Just to have something raw heading towards him would have just been, felt a little more fresh for me.
Either would have been better than the one that we got, because it just didn't make sense. And even showing them like building it at the end for the message to be received one day, it's just like, you know, because you know by the next time we get another episode, like, who's going to be talking about that? No human is even going to believe in aliens anymore. They never do, you know. And like you said, there's going to have to explain it away. They're going to have to explain it away as some kind of cover up by NASA or something like that. But it just seems ridiculous, you know.
Plus,
to have had there. And even as a stinger, it didn't work. It just didn't work.
Plus, there was it felt like it was an episode which was rushing for time. It was finding it hard to wedge everything in.
Yeah.
So you lose 4 minutes straight off the bat for something which is just not needed. And you could use those to sort of expand the characters a bit in the middle place, which is what I think it needed.
I also do think that the Victorian... what era is that, actually,
Victorian.
The soldiers are from?
Victorian.
It is Victorian, good. I do think that the Victorian spacesuit was a bit far. That was another thing. Like, I would have lost the message in the beginning. I would have lost the Florida aspect, and I would have lost the Victorian spacesuits. Maybe I've had Friday have worked them up some kind of suit or way that they could go out to the surface of the planet, because that just didn't sit well to me, you know, especially with the gramophone earpiece so that they could actually hear conversations. Like, it just, that seemed built in to suffocate yourself, you know. It didn't seem to work very well to me. And it's okay. Like, it's a livable part of the show. Like, it's like, okay, suspend my disbelief, no problem. I would live with that much more. But those were kind of my main issues with it. Otherwise, I like this story. Oh, also the Ice Warrior weapon, the effect that it used to kill the alien, to kill people, which I thought, to be perfectly honest, I thought, hey, that's kind of a cool effect. Shame they use it for a pre-existing alien who never had done such a thing before. You know, it would have worked as a much more interesting device for some other kind of alien.
I loved it.
I was saying on Facebook, I think what it was trying to do was trying to sort of take the effect from the old Seeds of Death and try and suggest what that effect would look like in a real situation. So the way it tugs them in, doesn't it, because of the way that the mirror thing on it.
With that makes me feel a lot better about it. I remembered that the weapon had that effect, but I didn't think about its effect on the human body. That's an interesting thought.
Sorry, Jim. It gave the Ice Warriors something a little more gnarly about them, something distinctive.
Sure, yeah. It was a good effect, too, the way it was. I mean, and I know we saw, I know we already saw the new Ice Warriors in Series 7, but it was a good effect the way it shot out of their wrist, too. I liked everything. I love the new suits. The Ice Warrior suits look great. The Ice Queen or the Empress look great. Pretty much the whole episode looked great. I liked all the effects on everything, all the costumes and so on. Like I said, maybe not so keen on the spacesuit. Well, I liked the spacesuit. I didn't believe the spacesuit, I guess, is probably the best way to go with that.
I quite liked
it.
But
it had a nice visual look.
It was a nice kind of compact set as well, wasn't it? They made a lot out of the space that they had. Was it a real cave, or was it a studio? I suppose it must have been a real cave. They're going to make a studio set look like that, could they? Oh, no, it must have been studio, because there was all those strange sort of Giant's Causeway things, wasn't there, going on?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it had to be a studio going by her lair alone. You know, that was very specific millwork in there on the walls, you know? I will say, though, that the one character, Jackdaw, when he started removing the crystals from her tomb, I had flashbacks back to the first Mummy movie with Brendan Fraser, when the one character was removing the scarab beetles from the wall. It seemed like it was just that scene all over again, except the beetles didn't come out of the crystals. It was waking her. That's not even a bad thing, because that's probably just an odd similarity, just because when you're writing the scene, a thief is going to steal a jewel.
It's a Matt Gaetis episode, so that will have been intentional.
True.
And speaking of which,
go on.
It's a Mark Gatiss episode, and he's written a few over the years, and they have been received in a wide variety of ways. How do you feel about it compared with his other Doctor Who's?
This has been one of his best for a long time, in my opinion.
Uh-huh. How would you place it along the others?
Man. I don't know. I still think Unquiet Dead is probably one of his strongest. But I would rate it, of the ones that I can remember, which was what? He did The Idiot's Lantern, the Sleep Booger Monster. He didn't do Victory. Did he do Victory of the Daleks?
Yes. And Crimson thing as well.
Oh, and the Crimson. Yeah. I would put it right under Unquiet Dead then, because all the other ones I wasn't really that keen on.
Well, there's the Idiot's Lantern, isn't there?
Yeah. And that one was okay. I would put this one probably above the Idiot's Lantern.
Okay. I'd probably put it just below the Unquiet Dead, I should think. But, what about you, James?
Don't know. Maybe. I thought Cold War was quite good.
Cold War was good, yeah. But
didn't blow
Wait,
me away.
Wait, Cold War was Gatiss as well?
Yeah.
Wow, see, I missed that. Okay, yeah, that one was another good one as well. I'll give you that.
But yeah, Unquiet Dead, Cold War have been his best. This was okay, but it felt like it needed work. And the rest, not being horrendously impressed with. So it functioned okay, but it, as I say, it just, I think you accept the trilogy as being like, okay, the trilogy was a bad call, didn't work, let's move on. So you go back to individual episodes again, and suddenly it feels like that magic is no longer there anymore. And I don't know, it feels disappointing for that, and I'm sort of a little annoyed at him for that. Isn't that cruel? But I feel a little annoyed. I feel there were just things in there which just didn't need to be in there. It's as if the people involved in it hadn't watched the first five. And, you know, as I say, Bill was replicated, was given Clara's lines.
Yeah.
It was just business as usual. So, you know, it's a slightly better above-the-mill season 9 one. But, no, this was not really what I wanted. And while there's some good bits in there, the acting was good all round. I liked the characters. I thought his characters were good, apart from how he used Bill. No, I thought the Doctor was badly written, thinking about it. He was really Series 8, Series 9 again. He was just sort of drifting. I didn't feel like he had any massive presence there. I didn't feel he had any massive control there.
Do you think the show should take a break from writers who have previously written for the new series? Do you think we should just keep bringing in new blood?
I think they'd be wise to get a lot of new blood in. Yeah.
Yeah.
And next week, Doctor Who's written by Rowan Munro.
There we go. Yeah.
Oh man, that didn't even mean to go there. That's so perfect.
But I mean, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because there is a lot of people that have been writing for Doctor Who since 2005. We've had Toby Whittles and Mark Gatiss this season, among others, and. And then next week we've got Rowan Munro, who hasn't written for Doctor Who in the best chunk of 30 years.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how someone who hasn't written for that long for the show perceives A, the show, and B, the characters that have been with the show for so long now, like Peter Capaldi or even Bill throughout the rest of the season, and the Master. If they do anything, obviously, with Missy in the next story as well. But it will be quite interesting to see that, I think. Number one, because I really enjoyed seeing how Graham Harper had grown as a director between the classic series of Doctor Who and his work on Series 2 and after as well. So I don't know. I mean, like, I think maybe somebody like Gatiss, maybe There's some, maybe what James was saying, that the Doctor was more so like Series 8 or 9 rather than Series 10. Maybe Gatiss just had his head stuck there and couldn't grasp the changes that they were trying to make. And certainly, as you said, since he was writing Bill more Clara-like, he definitely seems like he was trapped. So maybe there's just an issue with somebody who has their head currently stuck in what they have been doing for the past 2 years or so with these particular characters versus somebody who hasn't touched the show since the classic series.
I think
it might turn out well.
I think there is a model issue there. I think probably when you're trying to write something like this, which is very, very hard, and you're trying to get it right, and you're used to certain elements of the form, you start fallbacking on tricks, and those tricks become evident. And that's how I'm kind of feeling. I just don't feel the Doctor has enough presence in the right way. I didn't feel that Bill had enough presence in the right way. And the way they had presence sort of functioned for the story rather than the characters, which,
okay,
like I said, well, feels pretty...
That's an interesting place for us to stop onto the next part of the podcast. But before we do, let's just hit the stats. Overnight viewing figures for Empress of Mars, 3.58 million, which is 20.6% of the total TV audience. So Doctor Who's lost about 2% of audience I'm pretty certain. I think it was over 20%, which is a fifth, obviously, of the viewing audience. It was down that day. There was a World Cup football qualifier on, which earlier that evening. Dot 2 didn't do badly in terms of the overall, but it just seems not a lot of people watching TV on a Saturday night at the moment. And the AI score was 83. So that's good. And just before we do move on, the BBC have announced a special screening of episode 11 of Doctor Who, complete with a live music accompaniment from the National Orchestra of Wales, which will take place in Cardiff on June the 24th. So that's in 2 weeks' time or so.
You realise, too, before we move on, that we didn't talk about what Nardole was up to.
Oh, yes, Nardole. Yes, we better had talk about Nardole, hadn't we?
Yeah.
So the TARDIS goes a bit skew if Nardole's supposed to be... what's he supposed to be doing? Moving the TARDIS? No? What was he supposed to be doing?
He was supposed to be getting, rope or something to go...
Oh, that's right, to go down
Bill.
The hole. That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's supposed to be getting some rope, goes back to the TARDIS. TARDIS goes a bit the Big Bang, and he's unable to control it. And he goes back to the university and asks Missy for help. And then lets her out. Now, there's so many holes in there, really. Like, how did he let her out? How come he's got that ability to let her out? How did she know what was wrong? Etc.
How was he willing to let her out when he was basically scolding the doctor for leaving the planet and the possibility of her getting out?
Absolutely, absolutely. And what was wrong with the TARDIS?
I could tell you what was wrong with the TARDIS.
Go on, then.
You see, I've noticed a continuity error, and I think that a human hand is to blame for everything that's going on. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but, you know, of course, I'm kidding, but it seems like a human hand may be to blame. No, in the scene when the... I'm so sorry for this lawn care going on outside the door, but anyway, when the TARDIS appeared back in the doctor's office... It was just two very brief shots of the TARDIS. But right before they cut back to Nardole in the console room going, well, gee, what's going on? We start to see his hand come out the TARDIS doors. So his hand's coming out, but when they cut to the box, he's at the console. He's either got really long arms or somebody else is in there pulling the strings. Or they didn't want us to see that. You know, one of those.
Well, maybe. So, but I'm fearful that it's not going to be explained what the TARDIS is up to, what the TARDIS was doing.
Yeah, it seems a little just convenient for the story kind of situation.
So, and then we've got Missy, and then we've got that strange comment at the end. That's, are you all right? What's that all about?
Yeah, when she said that, my first thought was. Who was it? It was one of you, Christian. I think it might have been you, that you feel that the doctor is going to have one of the longest regenerations ever. Like maybe he's been regenerating the whole season or something like that. And that was immediately my thought. If it wasn't you guys, somebody else said that to me. And that was just immediately my thought when she said, are you all right? That, you know, he's dying. He's already stuck in the regeneration phase or something like that. But who knows?
Well, maybe that nonsense last week started it off.
Maybe so.
The fake regeneration that just had no contextual purpose for someone who knows nothing about Time Lords. But hey.
Exactly. Yes. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
Go on.
So there's that. So we would welcome your thoughts on that because we're baffled by it all. And it's probably got something to do with the other master. But, you know, the way this series has panned out so far, there's been surprises. Presented early, anything could happen. And also, while I'm on the subject, do speak to us on Facebook or Twitter, or leave us a review on iTunes, because that gives us a nice warm glow inside, knowing that our listener shares his or her appreciation with other people to read on iTunes. That's dead nice. So, the other topic is, I've actually lost it, so that's really good, isn't it? So basically, Chris Chibnall has been speaking about not so much plans, but his kind of angle on Doctor Who for series 11 and onwards. There's a interview with Chibnall in Television, which is an in-house magazine of the Royal Television Society, which has been picked up by the Radio Times website. We'll have the link in the show notes for you, because you will want to read this. He says that he resisted accepting the job for a long time, and he said he went in with ideas about what he wanted to do with it, and I think he was kind of expecting them to say, no, we don't want to do that. And they said, great. Which basically, the inference from this is that he's presented a different way of doing Doctor Who, and the BBC perhaps have been looking at Doctor Who thinking it's a bit stuck in a rut. This won't be news to anyone who's a long-time listener of the podcast, because, you know, our people at the BBC sounds like kind of Secret Service kind of thing. People that have been kind enough to share us information with the podcast with a K, with contacts at the BBC, have kind of intimated that this is the case, that the BBC or people in particular positions of influence at the BBC have been a bit dissatisfied with the angle of Doctor Who and the shape and style of Doctor Who over the years. So to see this interview, you know, where Chibnall says, I stress this is my personal opinion, he says, at the heart of the schedule, Doctor Who used to be an unmissable family show, and for some reason it slipped a bit from the national consciousness. He's absolutely right. I mean, even without our contacts, we've talked about this again and again on the podcast with a K, haven't we?
Chaps? Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, what guys, when you read this, what did you think? James?
Go on.
I thought it was quite brutal, really, given that he is talking to promote his future version, and in doing so, both him and James Strong end up in their respective conversations sort of suggesting that where it is now is not a good place, which I thought was quite bold. And yeah, I mean, me and Brian were talking about this beforehand, and I'm sure Brian will have more to say on it, but it is, I don't know, I mean, I must admit, I'm quite happy with it. I like the idea of something, trying something new, because I just think that's what the show needs to be doing at the moment.
Yeah,
it's 10 years old. That's hard for any show. It's I know it's got a built-in sort of some sort of rejuvenation thing. I can't think of a word for it in its format that keeps it fresh and
reset
alive. A reset switch, or I don't know, something. I don't know, Metachlorians, something that makes you change your face. It can change its face, basically.
Regeneration.
Every few years.
Age
no,
old,
that wasn't
it. Renewal.
Renewal, of course. Renewal, the classicist word. Renewal. it has that. But even then, it's still got the problem that that doesn't work unless you can, truly renew it in some form. And I think, I can't remember, we said it or I said it with someone else. I think I said it with someone else, but we've said it anyway. That if you take the 10 years that we've had of Doctor Who now, and you take the 10 years from 1963 to 1973, 1974, the changes in style are very much different in that first 10 years.
Yeah.
Considerable. And I think that's what kept it fresh, and that's what kept the audience figures to some degree. Well, they weren't perfect. You know, Troughton certainly hit a rut. But that approach of redefining it as soon as it hit a rut was what kept it going. You know, by 10th Planet, the ratings were going down. You had issues with Hartnell. They took a very bold move. Again, with Troughton to Pertwee, another very big, bold move to sort of fight, you know, the just apathy of the format. And I think hopefully that's what he's going to try again. Or will it just feel like Torchwood? I don't know. But I think, as we've said before, there's going to be a shift towards that family audience. Mm. Tea time show, capitalize on the young, capitalize on the family. You know, that's what the audience, that's what they want. They want a strong family drama for the strong family Saturday slot. They don't want this fannish, dark, quite clever show, which doesn't really have an audience base, particularly bar its fans, which is too dark to go on at 6:20 and has to go on at 7:30, 7:45, 8 o'clock, which is totally against its remit. So, yeah, I think there's some interesting things coming ahead, whether it'll work or not, who knows?
Another math entirely, yeah. James Strong, the director who worked on most of Broadchurch, if not all of it, with Chibnall, says, I know what a big fan of the show he is, and I know how much he feels he has a vision for it. It's a five-year project, which will tie into information we've had with regards to BBC Worldwide and a deal with China. That was a huge decision, continues Strong. He's in his absolute prime and could have done whatever he wanted writing-wise. It's an absolutely wonderful result for Doctor Who. I think Chris essentially writes emotional thrillers, and that's perfect for that show. I can't see James Strong being involved in every single episode. However, I could imagine there being a situation whereby he's the person directing key episodes.
Mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing, though.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Not at all. I think you know, we talk about Doctor Who as it is at the moment, and it's they've done a good job in refreshing this show for this year's run overall, I think. But, you know, we need to be looking to the future. And I think that's, you know, I know there's people who are, for some reason, anxious by Stephen Moffat and Peter Capaldi leaving, but I don't think there's anything really. I mean, listening to that, that's a positive development for the future of Doctor Who. That's, you know, that's someone who's clearly thinking about what they want to do and want to do something a bit different. We should, as you said, James, it should be applauded. What do you think, Brian?
I don't know. I mean, I agree that it's nice to see that somebody's got a new vision for the show rather than kind of redoing the staple that's been done since Russell started up in 2005. But hearing the concept that, you know, a full running series theme is mooted, basically, is where they started to lose me, because that's where we've been having issues, especially in Moff's era, but certainly in Russell's era as well. Like, once you have a full running series theme, then every story is connected in some way, and it doesn't feel like any story can stand on its own. So I'm a little bit cautious about that. I mean, obviously I'll judge it after seeing it, but the bold ideas also that he thought was going to be rejected and the BBC said, yeah, sure too. It's kind of like, I wonder, like, I want a change. I want something new, but I want the show to be at its best rather than taking the things that don't work. And it sounds like doing the running theme storyline like Broadchurch would be doing the things that don't work to me. So I don't know. It sounds like it could be a good thing. It sounds like it could be a bad thing, but the only true way to know is to see how it turns out.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, well, I mean, we'll find out next year, isn't it? And we'll probably find out. We'll probably get a few clues about it before then, because, you know, there's a new Doctor being cast. Or, according to Russell T. Davies, has already been cast. That, it has to be said, must be the most effortless segue into a new topic I've ever done, and I did it completely by accident, and I've ruined it because I've given away the magic. But there you go. So Russell T. Davies was interviewed last week at an event, and he said that they've cast the new Doctor.
This is something that he said.
This is something that Russell T. Davies said, yeah.
That is indeed.
Pardon?
But surely they're on the quest to find a new Doctor.
Say again.
According to the
Radio Times article said, it said they're on a quest to find the new Doctor.
Yes, I know.
Chibnall and Strong.
Yes.
Unless they mean that the new season is about the quest to find the new Doctor. The bold new move.
The Doctor of Time.
Mm. Or the Davis of Time.
The key to the Doctor.
Russell Time Davis.
The key to the Doctor.
There you go.
Perhaps. Eventually I'll find the link that I need for this. Okay, I've lost it. So, yeah, basically that happened. Now, I reached out to one of our contacts to see if we could get any verification on this. And there was verification. It is a deal, apparently. Whether it's a done deal or not, I'm not sure whether they've done the signing. But there is certainly someone that they have finalized on. It isn't Aidan Turner, I'm reliably informed, and I don't think it's Chris Marshall, which doesn't bode well for Ardlo Hanlon in 5 years' time. But sorry about that, Ardle. A few names have been mentioned. We're talking someone in the 30s, apparently, and someone who's been, who isn't unknown, but isn't ultra famous, a bit like many other Doctor Who stars of the year, such as David Tennant and Matt Smith. I'm not going to throw any names around because we're still waiting and I don't want to get anybody into trouble. So, yeah, so that's that. There is a Doctor on the horizon. We may find out who he is. And it, I did say he. Sorry, the minority. But, you know, you'll get your chance again in a few years' time. So that's that. Chaps, we're
are they the minority?
I think they're the minority, yes.
Are they? I thought statistically they were the majority.
No, I think they're the minority. I think they're a very noisy minority with a lot of passion for it, and I wouldn't dare sell them short
on
that.
I'm talking about the gender. You're talking about the fandom.
Yeah, I'm talking about the gender swapping thing. Right.
Yeah, that's the difference.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So we're trundling towards, or stomping Ice Warrior style towards the end of this week's podcast with a K, and it has been, as ever, a delicious little chat with my good podcast colleagues, Brian Turnover. Now, you weren't here last time James and I got together. And this is a little bit of nostalgia for you. But apparently, we started the podcast 10 years ago this month.
Oh, right. Wow, this month? Nice.
Yeah, this month, June, yes.
Jeez.
Yeah. I've shared a link to it in the earlier show's show notes. So if anyone wants to go back and listen to that 10 minutes of two people flailing with a microphone with no idea what to talk about. Amazingly, there was no plan. And it was all Brian's production as well. Brian did a nice little, put the Pertry Who, I Am the Doctor theme tune as the theme tune for the first podcast, which was good. I thought it was a good choice, Brian.
Well, thanks. 10 years on, he finally tells me that.
Yes. And it was, of course.
No, that's cool.
It was, of course, the first time that we, heard about the man who denies Daleks can fly, but that's another matter.
Oh my god.
So, 10 years of this. It's amazing. And we're nearly at 300 as well. Which is...
Well, it's been a lot of fun, that's for sure.
It certainly has, yeah. I've certainly looked forward to my podcasts with a K, and as I'm sure you do too, dear listener. We will... bid you farewell, if I want to speak like a normal person. And we will probably, I think, play you out with a trailer for the next episode of Doctor Who, The Eaters of Light, by Rona Munro and directed by Charles Palmer. Until next time, it's goodbye from the three of us.
The Ninth Legion and the Keeper of the Gate. They disappeared.
Except they didn't.
Where is my friend, and what destroyed the Roman army?
Something here managed to wipe out 5,000 Romans.
Every hour of sunlight that feeds it makes the world darker and the beast stronger.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.